Today's Walking Dead feedback show is sponsored by TrueCar. When you're looking for a new or used car, you need to feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price because, you know, like in the Saviors, they have everything on a point system. Who knows what's fair? But when you're using TrueCar, you know that you're getting a great deal because you'll have pricing context, information that empowers you to feel confident, just like Eugene was feeling confident with all the information that he had on this week's Walking Dead. With TrueCar, you can see what other people in your local market paid for the car that you want to buy. And from there, you can connect with a local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. With TrueCar, you'll easily find the car that you want. And once you register with TrueCar, you'll see pricing on the actual inventory, just like the inventory that they take at Alexandria. This is the exact competitive pricing offered to you by a TrueCar certified dealer for an actual vehicle on their lot. It's pricing you'll see before you go to the dealership, so you can feel confident when you show up. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing and enjoy that quick, easy car buying experience. On average, users have saved over $3,000 off MSRP. Over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles are available at over 13,000 dealers with over 3 million cars sold. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. The Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 11 is still over, but we're just getting started taking your feedback here on our Walking Dead feedback show. And now, here are the two guys who would not say no to kettle chips. I'm Rob Cesternino. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well. Now I just want some kettle chips. Now I'm hungry.
Yeah. Between the kettle chips, the pretzels, the beer, the pickles, this was the most delicious episode in the history of The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, I feel like maybe it's been a while since we've brought this up, but Walking Dead has a food fetish, man. Like, Walking Dead really loves to, like, do, like, some zombie apocalypse food porn action every once in a while. Whether it's the big vat of pudding or the cheese whiz that Michonne is spraying around everywhere like it's silly string. I found the dog food sandwich to be unappetizing, but the baguette looked pretty decent. There's always, like, a good food situation going on here on The Walking Dead.
Yeah, well said. And so excited once again to get back into an episode that you and I both really enjoyed from the other night.
Yeah, no, I still really like it, even thinking more on it. You know, it's just, I don't know, I think that the Eugene and Negan scenes, those were really good. I think that getting to spend some time with an awkward character like Eugene, that's really fun as well. And I think that there are multiple layers to this episode. I think that this is going to be one of those episodes that holds up well in terms of revisiting it, because I really do think that Eugene is up to some shenanigans, and maybe whenever we find out what those shenanigans are, we're going to look back at this episode and be like, oh, they were planting the seeds for that here.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out, because I think that that's still the one area that you and I don't see eye to eye on with this episode, of just how premeditated Eugene's actions are at this point. Is he really just flying by the seat of his pants, or is he in full Heisenberg mode, as you were saying?
In fairness, they're shorts. He's not much of a pants guy.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how it all ends up playing out.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk it through. We've got plenty of feedback that we can sort through and plenty of opportunities to bat back and forth where Eugene is standing,
Lucille,
in terms of his moral compass. Yes, Lucille. By the way, not for anything, but my wife was watching an episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air the other day, Rob. And it's one of the great episodes of The Fresh Prince. If you're a Fresh Prince fan, or even if you're just a Fairweather Fresh Prince fan, you probably remember the episode where Uncle Phil pool sharks the guy to save Will from some trouble. Do you remember that one?
Vaguely, yeah. Vaguely, sounds very familiar. Although it could be one of those Mandela syndrome type things, but I think I remember that. Sounds familiar.
Berenstain.
Yeah.
No, this is real.
Like that's the one where Sinbad showed up as a genie also.
Yes, that's right. Well, in this episode, which I had seen many times growing up, and it's one of my favorite Fresh Prince episodes, and Emily saw that it was on, so she turned it up full blast, and I was just distracted from everything else I was doing, so I had to start watching it. Uncle Phil starts pool sharking this guy, and when he makes the turn to like declare that he is a true fantastic pool player, he turns to Jeffrey and he goes, "Jeffrey, break out Lucille." And Jeffrey proceeds to take out a pool stick that apparently is named Lucille, which is Uncle Phil's weapon that he uses to proverbially bash in the brains of his pool rival.
So is this hack to have an inanimate object called Lucille? Is it all just like a tribute to B.B. King?
I think so. I think that's probably it. I used to think that it was like a Louisville Slugger reference for Negan, but I don't know. I think maybe it's all just a one big elaborate B.B. King tribute.
Okay. B.B. King, more popular than we could have ever imagined.
Yes, yes. Doing really well. Rob, how was The Talking Dead this week?
Talking Dead was good. I think that I have been very critical of The Talking Dead, especially here in season 7. But I think that this was the high water mark for Talking Dead in the last, certainly all through this half season and maybe even through the entirety of season 7. So,
wow.
It was Josh McDermott, who's yes. always great on The Talking Dead. I think he might be the number one pick in any sort of cast member on The Talking Dead. He's really, really funny. He's a great fit for, like, he can talk about the actual show. He has stories from filming, and he's also, like, a really funny guy. So he's awesome on both The Walking Dead and The Talking Dead. He was really funny. They also had Austin Emilio, who played Dwight.
Whose face looks a little cleaner in real life.
Not much.
Not much. Not much. Why? Why not much? I didn't get to see it. Did something happen?
No, he just has a lot of facial hair. He has like a big mustache. And wow. So he's fine. He didn't really contribute too much. And then you had a good wild card in there in Little John.
What?
Yeah. So Little John was very funny throughout the show. And Little John did have one take that I thought was a very cold take, which I didn't really agree with. That Little John said that Negan is the craziest villain in anything. Basically, he said that Negan is a more unpredictable wild card than the Joker.
Stop that. Stop that, Little John. What? Okay. I don't know. I don't know if I buy that, Little John. That seems ridiculous. I don't think that you can compare Negan and the Joker, or at least you can't do that and expect Negan to be the one who walks away.
Yeah. So I don't know about that, Lee John. I don't know about that, Little John.
Yeah.
But all in all, really strong episode of The Talking Dead. And yeah, again, Josh McDermott, very funny. And Chris Hardwick is at his funniest when he can play off of people and he doesn't have to like carry the load of trying to be funny all by himself. So it really does help the show when you have another funny person there. Talking Dead could also be like 15 minutes. I mean, there is a lot of fat on that bone. I mean, just like the segments that they do on that show that, you know, it really is, you know, they call it The Talking Dead, but there's like 15 minutes of talking. And the rest of it is just graphics and loud music of like, all right, let's take a look at some infographics now. Okay, like, all right, let's put some tweets up on the screen.
It's a lot of just guitar, a lot of electric guitar going on. Okay. I'm always a little reluctant to rag these post-show recaps for going on too long, considering that we spend 2 hours a week talking about Walking Dead.
Very fair.
But I hear your point.
All
I hear
fair, but I'm telling you, for the first time, I didn't watch it on DVR. Usually I can DVR through through all of like the like infographics and like cards that are up on the screen and the montage of who we lost this week and, right. you know, all sorts of different things like that. But I watched it on my phone on the AMC app and I could not. And then it was also like with like 10 minutes of commercials in between segments also. So that was not the best way to consume this piece of content.
Not ideal. Well, what is the best way to consume The Talking Dead? That's our first question that we've got here in the feedback show, and this voicemail from Lindsay from London.
Hi, Rob and Josh. It's Lindsay from London. I wanted to ask Rob, you're always bitching about The Talking Dead, rightly so, but who would be your ideal lineup of panelists on The Talking Dead? Thanks. Bye.
Okay.
Never too early for a little bit of shade, Rob. who is your ideal? Like, you have three spots, and they can be filled by anybody. Anyone.
Yeah.
At least if they're alive. Who would they be? So, who would they be and why?
I think that you want people that are, like, somehow affiliated with the show that have a really good personality. And we've touched on this, I think, over the couple of years that we've talked about this. But I feel like that, you know, Josh McDermott, I've talked about him. He's a great one. I think that some combination of him and or Robert Kirkman is another great one, that he's that same sort of personality that knows everything about the show, can speak to it, but is also funny, can make jokes, can bounce off of Chris Hardwick. You know, he'll say things that are sort of like a little unpredictable and off script at times as well. So that's fun for Chris Hardwick to bounce off of. Whereas, you know, they've had like Scott Gimple on there and he's like, you know, deadly serious about the whole thing, like too much gravitas about what they're talking about. And then you want to have, you know, just a really funny comedian who's there, who's going to, you know, I talked about in the past, Jason Alexander was somebody who is also really good. Mary Lynn Reschkaub.
Yes,
she was Chloe. Really great. It was very funny the time they had Slash on there. I believe that was the same show as Mary Lynn Reschkaub, that, you know, because he had somebody who was there was just like, whoa, like just like a celebrity who's like a real wild card. So you want, you know, some combination of cast members with a personality, comedians, and maybe like the wild card or two.
Have you been reading Josh McDermott's recaps of The Walking
No.
Dead?
No. Where does he do them?
He's doing those with Dalton Ross on Entertainment
that's
Weekly.
That's a good combo. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the Dalton Ross, Josh McDermott combo. That's a bromance I'd like to see in person.
So good. Yeah, it can be very fun. That's why I get frustrated. I know to use your word, Lindsay, I bitch about the show, but it can be a fun show when you get the right people. But when you have the wrong people that come on there and just like are talking like it's inside the actor's studio, I think it's not a very fun format.
All right. Shall we hop into the episode itself, Rob? All right. Let's start digging into this. And I think because you brought it up before, I feel like why not just start getting into it now? The matter of Eugene, and what is Eugene actually up to here in the sanctuary? Is he just, as it seems on the surface, is he just like a total coward and he's just freaking out? And so he's just going to acquiesce to Negan's requests. He's just going to do everything this guy says. Or does he have something more up his sleeve? This is from Kemba. Kemba writes in, with Eugene in the sanctuary, assuming that he will be manufacturing their weapons, could a Star Wars Rogue One situation play out here? Will Eugene build weapons that will be secretly ineffective like Galen Erso? What do you think about
spoiler.
This? A little bit. We're like 2 months away from Rogue One at this point. Almost yeah, 3 months away from Rogue
One. It's more like
One.
Plot synopsis than spoiler.
Yeah, that's fine. Totally fine. But what do you think about this? Do you think that Eugene has it in him to create some sort of flaw in the Death Star? We at least know right now that he is the guy who is recommending to Negan, if you want to fortify your fence, we can, you know, we can smelt these zombies to the fence. We can use some liquid metal and bolster your defenses this way. Is he going to is he going to implement something that is going to weaken Negan's defense?
Oh, Eugene, I need you to build me a laser that can destroy a planet.
That would be so cool. Starkiller base.
I think that would be a tall order. I don't think that Negan is asking Eugene to build some sort of a super weapon. He's not even asking him to build bullets, as we thought. What we saw in the episode was that Negan tasked him with coming up with some way to keep the structural integrity of the walkers that they're putting on the fence. I think that that would be sort of hard pressed of a thing for Eugene to booby trap or not have working. I think that Eugene is only useful to the saviors if he's coming up with good plans. I mean, to use the Rogue One example, there was a small exploit that the rebels would have been able to take advantage of if they knew about it. I don't know if Eugene is going to be able to create something like that in the Sanctuary.
I think that the thing with Negan and Eugene is, I think that Negan is looking at Eugene as sort of this utility player who's, you know, able to do all sorts of stuff. He can create this awesome wall. Apparently he could do sweet science experiments that amuse Negan's wives. And the reason that he scooped him up in the first place is because the dude made a bullet. And it does seem like the Saviors have a decent amount of guns right now, aren't really hurting for ammunition, but they are living in the zombie apocalypse in a day where they're going to need to keep finding bullets. And if they've got somebody who knows how to build them himself, why not lean on that guy? So maybe the bullet thing isn't in play right now, but I'd be really surprised if it doesn't come into play. And I think that's where you could start seeing Eugene, start to put some plans into action.
Yes, but if Eugene's plan is to start creating blanks for the saviors so that
that would be hilarious. Yeah, he just like loads them up with like, I don't know, like caps for right. A cap gun. Yeah.
At the point when the bullets don't work, I think that's a very easy thing. You know, we're not talking about like in Rogue One where like, okay, well, that why don't you build a Death Star that doesn't have a working planet-killing laser beam? I think that that's like an easy thing to say, okay, this is what we hired you for. This isn't working.
Yeah. Let's turn to a voicemail to keep this conversation going. This is from Dutch Whiskey, who has some thoughts about the video game library that seems to exist at the Sanctuary.
Yeah, Josh, I got a question for you. I know it's the apocalypse, but Eugene's playing Atari. Really? Yaz Revenge from 1982? Ain't they living in 2012 by now? You're telling me that the Saviors couldn't get them Hilltop or Kingdom knuckleheads to hook them up with a snazzy new Xbox or PlayStation? You know, some Grand Theft Auto, some Mortal Kombat. What's next? Reruns of Who's the Boss on VHS? Come on. What do you guys think? I'm out.
I do wonder about the fact that all they have is all of this old school early 80s stuff. Right. Like, this is what would survive the apocalypse? Is that real?
Yeah. This is a great point where I think that they're trying to do something on The Walking Dead where it's almost like this Dharma initiative, like throwback type thing. But I think they're forgetting that this show really does take place in like 2012. It is very unlikely that the Saviors would have access to an Atari more so than a PlayStation 2 or an Xbox. I feel like you go into any house that you're going to be raiding, nobody has looted the Xbox, maybe the canned food and stuff like that. But maybe it's like a point system, Josh, and you start off on Atari, but then
then you work your way
right. Then you can get like a NES. Then you can get like Sega Genesis if you get enough points.
Is it
going
to be like The Walking Dead's version of The Wiz, where it's just like a video game tournament and they have to work your way up to get to the cool stuff?
Right. So Negan, he has the Xbox 360.
Interesting. Look, man, it's like impossible to get an Atari, like a functioning Atari today. And the world isn't over yet. You know, like how do you find a functioning Atari in the apocalypse is really a good question.
I do think that there are like novelty ones that you could get like at Spencer's Gifts that you can like the whole like Atari is like in the joystick and you just plug it in with like cables into the back of your TV. Like there's no actual console. Yeah. But it is weird that they have like novelty video games here.
I think that the systems that really depend on like playing online and co-op, I think those are going to be kind of useless, but neither here nor there. The point is we should be talking about this video game that neither you, myself, or Alex Kidwell, none of us could identify when we came on the air after the episode had aired. This game, Rob, is called Yar's Revenge. Have you ever played Yar's Revenge? Have you heard of Yar's Revenge?
No, I had not. I played a lot of Atari as a kid, but that was not a game that I had.
a 1982 game called Yara's Revenge. I have not played it myself. From Wikipedia, this is how the game is described. The player controls an insect-like creature called a Yar, not a Tasha Yar.
Yeah, she died in Terminus.
Yeah, she's been gone for a while. A Yar who must nibble or shoot through a barrier in order to fire his Zorlon cannon into the breach. The objective is to destroy the evil Q-tile, which exists on the other side of the
resistance
barrier.
Resistance is Q-tile.
Yeah, resistance is Q-tile. The Q-tile can shoot at the not Tasha Yar, even if the barrier is undamaged, by turning into the swirl. The player is warned before the shot is fired, and he can retreat to a safe distance to dodge the enemy's energy blast. The Yar can hide from a pursuing destroyer missile within a neutral zone in the middle of the screen, but the Yar cannot shoot while in the zone.
Tasha Yar was in the neutral zone in the mirror universe.
So the swirl could kill the Tasha Yar anywhere, even inside the neutral
zone. It wasn't a mirror universe. It was an alternate timeline.
That's fine.
But
that's
you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly what you're saying. Does any of this sound like there's any parallels to be gleaned between not Tasha Yar's revenge and Eugene's current situation? Do you see any connections in terms of, like, on a metaphoric level, Rob, anything that's connecting these two things?
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe, like, at the loosest of loose, like, you say, okay, oh, let's pick a game title that has the word revenge in it,
right?
And maybe eventually Eugene is plotting revenge on Negan because of Abraham and Glenn. But this is a thing where, Josh, you know how I feel about this stuff, where, like, if we look too deep into these things, yeah, that we're just looking into our own butts at some point.
Well, you definitely don't want to do that unless you really have to.
Is that a phrase?
I don't
is
know.
That a euphemism?
I don't hold on to your butts. I don't know if it's looking into your own butt. I know navel gazing. I'm unfamiliar with butthole gazing.
This is like you're straining so hard, yeah, to turn around.
It's really difficult. Yeah, physically challenging. All right, so you can't see the parallels, but a quick search online, Rob, says that a lot of people do see parallels between Yara's Revenge and what's going on with Eugene. This is from...
Of course they do.
This is from comicbook.com. The parallels can be made in the initial bit of description, with Negan and the Saviors posing as the evil Q-tile existing on the other side of the Sanctuary's well-protected walls, with a neutral zone filled with walkers dividing them. The Saviors have been able to shoot at anybody in Alexandria at any time they want, while the good guys have required more calculation in their efforts. So, Rob, maybe you weren't straining to look at your own backside hard enough, because clearly it's doable.
Josh McDermott had a story on The Talking Dead about why did Eugene order lobster with the Saviors when they said you could have any food you want.
Yeah.
And he told the story that he knows that the show, that there can be sort of deep things at times in the writing. And he thought, oh, lobster. And there he talked about a story about how there were prisoners and they were forced to eat lobster. And then the prisoner said it was cruel and unusual punishment. And Eugene, because he's a prisoner, that's why he's ordering the lobster. And he talked to Scott Gimple about it, and Scott Gimple said, no, it's just lobster.
Even Scott Gimple couldn't go that far.
Right. I think it's just an Atari game. It has the word revenge in it. It was cooler than Pac-Man.
Okay. So let's move on then. Let's keep this going. So Yar's Revenge, 1982. Another big thing that happens with Eugene in this episode, Rob, is when he goes and chastises number 16 and takes all of those supplies after he pulls rank, after he, flashes his badge around and says, I'm the coolest new person here in the Sanctuary and you got to give me all your cool stuff. And he walks away, and this very, very jarring song comes on that I was not a fan of, Rob, as I said on the podcast. Not a big fan of that music that played.
No, you were not.
I was not. AJ Mass, our good friend AJ Mass, is a fan of the music that played, and quickly came online to tell me that it's a They Might Be Giants song. I gotta be honest, I'm not a They Might Be Giants guy. Are you a giant They Might Be Giants guy, Rob?
I'm more of a They Might Be Jets guy.
They Might Be Jets. Apparently, this is a song, Everything Right Is Wrong by They Might Be Giants. And AJ suggests that there are some things in the lyrics from this song that speak to what's going on in this episode of Walking Dead. Number one, he says so much in one song. Number one, it's partially about a once happy marriage coming to a tragic end, which would be a reference to Dwight and Sherry. Number two, the song mocks how stories stories in pop culture tend to go on and on endlessly without ever coming to a conclusion.
Hey, I could see that.
That would just kind of be The Walking Dead. Number three, there's a key line, a weasel overcome, but not before the damage done. And AJ says, Negan be the weasel to me. So AJ seeing some connections between this song and what's going on Walking Dead. Further, AJ has a further element to his conspiracy theory. 1982, Rob, is the debut of Yar's Revenge. 1982 is also the formation of They Might Be Giants. And 1982 is also the year of the Chicago Tylenol murders. Have you heard of this, Rob? The Chicago Tylenol murder house.
Hold on. We can't have a through line of 1982 was the year They Might Be Giants was formed.
Yes.
If it's not even the year the song came out.
Yes. 1984 is when Everything Right Is Wrong was first released.
Okay. I mean, we're getting into
Homeland
conspiracy theory, bulletin board material. Yeah. That 1982 was the year They Might Be Giants was formed.
Yes. What do you think of the idea, though? We know that Eugene is hanging on to some poison pills right now. Is it possible that he is planning to like go around and stealthily poison some key members here at the sanctuary?
Well, he has two pills.
He has two pills currently.
Two pills currently that would be required to take out Negan. So I don't think that we're going to have some sort of like mass poisoning of the saviors. I don't think
that's the case. So at this point, then, what do you think is going on with Eugene? Do you really think that it's just straight down the middle? This dude's a coward. This dude is doing exactly what he feels is best for him, which is tucking himself underneath Negan's wing. And there is no current plan of action to do something that's going to screw with Negan.
I believe that Eugene is 100% on board with Negan to the point where, I don't think that he's flipped.
He's just completely stone cold Negan.
He's going to earn his keep with Negan. And if the opportunity presents itself to rejoin Rick, and I think that that's where he would prefer to be. Those are his friends. But, you know, under these circumstances, he's not going to go on a suicide mission to try. Like, he's not going to pull off the Carl Grimes here where he's going to act out of his own best interest to try to go with some crazy plan. That he's just going to bide his time and wait for if there's an opportunity to take out Negan potentially, you know, or rejoin Rick's group. I think he would do it, but I think that he's just going to, you know, play the slow game.
What's the point of the episode if he's not, you know, coming up with something? I just don't know why.
Do you want to ask that question?
I do want to ask that question. What's the point if he's not coming up with some sort of backup plan? Your answer would be it's The Walking Dead.
No, my answer would be that he is making a home here, that for all he knows that, you know, that Rick's group is going to go out and get murdered tomorrow and that he wants to sort of cover his bases. I think that Eugene, more so than most of the other characters on the show, is a survivor and that he's going to end up being okay.
Okay.
No matter which group reigns supreme, I think that he's probably a character who's more at home in the Game of Thrones universe than in the Walking Dead universe. That whatever group comes into power, I think Eugene's going to find a place.
What would Eugene's cover story be in Westeros? Like, what would he be trying to do? What would he be running away from? What would he be selling himself as? Like, pretending he's a maester, but he's not really a maester?
Yeah, he, like, studied with one of the maesters and
I have every link in the chain that you could possibly get from the Citadel and more secret ones that you've never even heard about.
Yes. So I think that I can't tell you about it. So I think that he's somebody who is going to just be taking stock of what's going on and making himself at home. And he's like the best kind of spy where if Rick's group comes along and they end up like attacking the sanctuary, Eugene can say, oh, yeah, this whole time I was just waiting for you guys to show up. Perfect timing on that, Mr. Grimes.
Yeah.
So that would be, I think, what he's going to ultimately do.
I feel like he's got something in the works. I just feel like I want to believe. I think that'd be fun. I think that maybe there's some stretching to be done to connect like Yara's revenge and the song and everything like that to some sort of foreshadowing of the plan that's in play. But I feel like something's going on. I don't feel like I like to read Eugene, you know, at the end of this episode when he's saying we are Negan to Dwight as just really preserving a cover. But your mileage may and does vary on this issue. So no need to spend any further time on it, but we could keep talking about the topic of Eugene either way. Okay. This is from Spencer Y. Spencer Y writes in, should Eugene be worried that he spurned Frankie and Tanya's request to give them the poison tablets? He seems to be crafting a slow burning plan to undermine Negan, maybe not, or biding his time for an escape or a rescue, maybe so. But will the ladies of Negan's harem make some hasty Rosita-like attempts to kill Negan that will backfire and put Eugene's plan and his stay at the sanctuary in jeopardy? So no matter, Rob, whether you believe that Eugene is concocting something or he is just going to get he's trying to figure out a way to live in both worlds, to like have himself braced in case Rick comes or in case he has to be a savior forever. Either way, is this whole thing with the poison pills, is that going to blow up because he turned down Negan's wife's request to poison Negan? Do you think that this is somehow going to blow back on Eugene?
No, because I think that Eugene had said to them, they said, okay, we're going to tell Negan. He's like, you can go ahead and tell him, he'll believe me, just like he believed Dwight instead of the doctor. He needs me more than he needs you. So I think that he is like correctly like sussed out how Negan thinks. And I don't think that this is going to be an issue. I wonder if we'll have another attempt on Negan's life from those women. But I don't think that that's ultimately going to be the case. Also, that I felt that Josh McDermott on The Talking Dead did not really seem to imply that Eugene had any sort of nefarious plans outside of what was on the surface in the episode. Again, maybe he's like really going out of his way to not spoil some sort of reveal that's coming down the road. But
yeah, you have to understand the Walking Dead actors are expert liars at this point, having, you know, had to sit on the secret of who did Negan kill all summer long.
Right.
And like Michael Cudlitz went out on the press tour as if he was on the whole season. So like these people are trained at that.
But I do think that there was a distinction where I felt like that talking about whether Eugene is truly one of the saviors or not, I felt like that every person that they showed, even in the footage of like interviews with the cast and crew that weren't there, it's like, well, is Eugene really part of the saviors or is he not? We're going to have to wait and see what his true intentions are. But they didn't really like leave a gray area in terms of talking about Eugene helping the women with making the suicide pills. Like they didn't describe it as, you know, Eugene was making the pills, but was he really trying to help them? I'm not really sure. Well, I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. Like they didn't put gray area into his motive, only gray area into his loyalty.
If Eugene is truly Negan, I hate Eugene.
He's not really.
I will be so furious.
Trying to imply like there's gray area. We know Eugene loves Rick and the survivors more than Negan. If Negan and Rick were both drowning, he would save Rick.
Worse than that, it would just be such a slap in the face, such as a face still exists to Abraham. You know, to side with Abraham's murderer would be BS. I'd be very upset with that. So I refuse to believe it's a possibility.
It's not.
For now.
It's not a possibility.
For now. Let's talk about one of the crazier things that Eugene witnessed in this episode and one of the more barbaric things we've seen from Negan, and he is already a pretty barbaric dude. From Rob Craig, since Negan killed the sanctuary's doctor, he's in need of a new one. Do you think the saviors will be heading to the hilltop to take their doctor? If so, that could be trouble since that is where Daryl is headed. Rob, did you know that actually the sanctuary's doctor's name was Dr. Carson? Do you know the name of the hilltop's doctor?
No.
It's also Dr. Carson.
So they don't even have to change the nameplate on the desk.
Carson versus Carson. And this is from the comics too. I actually believe that these characters are brothers. I believe that they, you know, it's not like a
wow.
I don't think it's a continuity goof, or if it is, it's a continuity goof that gets retconned into making the two Carsons brothers. So the Hilltop's Dr. Carson is gonna have some very, very sad news to attend to pretty soon here.
I don't think that Negan is going to quickly like, oh, I can't believe I killed my doctor. Oh.
Well, what if he wakes up the next day and he has a cold and he needs like some, I don't know, if he needs a check-in.
He is under the impression that Eugene, because he has PhDs, is also a doctor.
Okay, so you think that that's what Negan is referring to when he says, I have a backup doctor.
Yeah.
A backup Dr. Carson, I believe, is what he says. And Anthony Tenorio had written in and said, I don't think Negan was referring to Eugene when he said, I have a backup Dr. Carson.
That is very possible. I mean, that is a very, very... you know, the thin plot point that they're like, I think a lot of people are going to be confused by that, but I mean, that's possible.
Okay. Let's talk about Negan by way of Dwight. Let's start talking a little bit about Dwight. This is once again from Kemba, who had written in. Do you guys think that Dwight might be the one to ultimately kill Negan? Negan has done a lot of horrible things to Dwight. When it's Negan's last moments, I could see Dwight being the one to tap into his rage and be the one to kill Negan. What do you think about this? Do you think that this episode pushed us in the direction of Dwight someday having a Darth Vader-like turn of character and throwing Negan into like the smelting pit or something akin to that? Do you feel like Dwight is being groomed to be the Negan Slayer?
No, I don't think so. I think that we have to have Rick or one of our main survivor groups. I mean, potentially could be Eugene, but I feel like that moment has to belong to Rick Grimes to pass payback. I mean, that's what this whole arc is ultimately about. So I don't think that would be a satisfying end to the Negan story if Dwight was the person to kill him.
Yeah. Matthew Murphy wonders, is Dwight still the assistant Negan old manager? Doesn't look like a great title when spelled out. Is Dwight still in Negan's good graces in the way that Dwight Schrute was always Michael Scott's guy?
Yeah, I think he definitely is. I think that there's no other takeaway from this episode than to think that Negan is as high on Dwight as he ever was.
Yeah, I feel like Dwight's doing pretty well. It's so weird that Negan just buys his lie outright and kills his doctor. But if he does have a backup doctor, then it's fine. I guess he can afford to lose one.
And he does buy his lie in that he's like, he wouldn't be so stupid because if we found Sherry, I'll kill him.
Yeah.
You know, he's like nobody would have the audacity to lie because they would know what the punishment was for lying.
Yeah, it would be bad. The punishment would be at least the iron, if not worse. All right. Well, speaking of Sherry and the fact that Sherry is on the run and connecting it back to Dr. Carson, Andy Amo wonders, wasn't Dwight's wife seeing the doctor to see if she was pregnant? My theory is that that's why she finally decided to leave. She's pregnant with Negan's baby, and the series is going to end with a 20-year fast forward, and Negan Jr. is fighting Judith and Maggie Jr. for control of the world.
That's funny.
What would Sherry and Negan's baby's name be? Sheegan?
I don't think that's how baby names work, Josh.
You don't just fuse the names of the parents?
Yeah. It's not like the celebrity couple portmanteau.
Well, we've been thinking about Gemily for the, you know, future occasion that such a child has brought into the world. You don't think that that's good? You don't like it?
I think that it would be sort of nicknamed the Gemily baby, but I think that formally, I think the baby would have its own name.
My friends like to kid that one day I am destined to have a son named Xander, who is going to be a total douche bro who's going to school me in sports and give me wedgies.
Okay.
Just to toss that out into the universe.
Not like George Mason from The Hilltop?
Potentially him as well.
He'll get your name wrong.
Do you think that there's anything to Andy Amo's theory that perhaps the reason why Sherry was seeing Dr. Carson is because she is pregnant with Negan's child and that is why she has run away?
That's interesting to me. The only thing that I would say that throws some cold water on that is why then also release Daryl? Like, she can leave, that's fine, but why is I need to release Daryl also part of that plan? Why are those two things attached?
Yeah, maybe because like she knows she's going to go. So why not do one last really good, common, you know, decency type of thing before she leaves would be how I would look at it potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that if not Negan is fertile, we've talked about this before, you know, why aren't many of his wives pregnant with his child?
Well, we haven't seen all of the wives. So we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, that could be coming up in the 90-minute Negan flashback episode.
Perhaps.
We hope that we will get such a thing. From Lena. Lena says that she agrees with your take from the other night, Rob, that we're probably going to see Sherry again before the season finale. So how do you think she's going to come back into the mix? Will she stumble upon Alexandria, the hilltop, the kingdom, maybe run into Carol in the woods? What are the odds that she reunites with Dwight before Negan takes one or both of them out?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Rob? Where do you think that we see Sherry? I love that idea. Sherry and Carol. That would be fun.
That would be fun. I don't know necessarily.
Carol certainly has a history of being like an abused spouse.
Yeah.
So I think that there could be an interesting dynamic between her and Sherry.
The area that Carol is in, is she inside the whatever walls of the, like, could anybody just wander into the kingdom?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't think you could just wander into the kingdom. I think the kingdom's pretty fortified. I think that they've made that clear on the show so far. But I think that Carol is like on the outskirts of the kingdom. I don't think that it would be that difficult for a bunch of saviors to just show up at Carol's house and take her down, as is Sir Richard's plan, for instance. So I don't think that it would be impossible for Sherry to just be wandering around and encounter this cabin in the woods or on the side of the road. It would be pretty coincidental for her to get to those parts, I think. But in terms of it being within the kingdom proper, I don't think that it is.
The only thing with the Sherry reunion is that if I'm Sherry, my game plan is to get as far out of Dodge as possible and not just sort of link up with one of these other settlements that are within Negan's purview. Is it possible that Sherry could make it like to Oceanside, where that's not really part? They don't know the saviors. They don't know anything with Negan. I think that she could fit in there.
If there is an episode in this second half of season 7 where it's just Sherry going to Oceanside and that's it, that's the whole episode, is that the worst episode of The Walking Dead?
I don't know. Could you see Sherry linking up with the garbage people?
Yeah, of course. Why not? I think that, you know, anyone who can protect her would be great.
Yeah, right now. She would take what she can get.
Sherry even says in the letter, she's like, I don't think I'm going to make it out here. So you have to imagine she's looking for a friend somewhere here. But by Dr. Carson's assessment of Sherry, she's the type of person you don't see in the world very often anymore because she's so nice. She's so sweet. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work out for Sherry. I'm not convinced that we necessarily ever have to see her again, but you know, it could work. It could work. I think the Carol one is my favorite possibility. I feel like that would be a good character dynamic.
Yeah. It'd be good if she could take her on as a Padawan, but I do think that the show has bigger plans ultimately for Sherry than for Dwight. Like I could see her eventually becoming part of the survivor group.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll have to see. Probably not happening next week unless it's like a surprise twist ending. Next week, Rob, looks like we're going to the fair, the county fair.
Yeah. Going to the fair, the carnival next week.
Yeah.
All right. So we will pick things up on Sunday night. And then, Josh, believe it or not, we're going to be halfway through the back half of the Walking Dead season.
I believe it. I believe that we will be there. And I'm excited. I'm excited for where we are. I think that this last episode was really fun. I'm looking forward to going to a carnival with the cast of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
As I often say, I like it when Walking Dead tries something a little weird. This seems weird to me. Zombies at the fair could be fun.
Well, that'll be very exciting to see this Sunday night. We'll be back with Alex Kidwell and have that podcast for you in our Walking Dead podcast feed at postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes, postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. If you want to get your feedback into the show next week after you watch the episode, you could also email us TWD@postshowrecaps.com or leave us your voicemail at postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. So looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments on postshowrecaps.com. Don't forget to follow the great Josh Wiggler on Twitter. He is at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Sestrino. Yep.
Yeah, like Ron Howard, but rather.
Okay. I thought you retired that.
Just a classic. It comes out every once in a while.
Okay.
Well, wait, Rob, breaking news are happening now.
Yes.
There's some breaking news before we sign out here. After our lengthy discussion of Talking Dead, Rob, did you see this news that's just popped up online?
What's happening, Josh?
It looks like the Talking Dead is expanding, Rob. The Talking Dead universe is growing.
How so?
We are going to be seeing Talking with Chris Hardwick a new hour-long show that's going to be airing every Sunday night, even when Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead are not on AMC at 11 p.m. on Sunday nights. So your wish for more Chris Hardwick has been answered.
I mean, Chris Hardwick is really hot right now in terms of his career. Right,
yeah. Yes.
I mean, that he is a great talent who I think has really tapped into. I mean, he's been podcasting on Nerdist, I think, since 2010. I think that Nerdist started right before I started going with Rob as a podcast, or like within like a couple of months of each other. And he's done a lot more with his podcasting talents than I have.
And don't sell yourself short.
It'll be interesting to see. I think that the things that I was like making fun of about like the cards and stuff like that, like, will they be able to, you know, get rid of that stuff and have it? Because the Nerdist podcast is very good. Chris Hardwick is a great long form interviewer. I love long form interviews. They're very hard to do on TV because you have so many breaks and you have to do segments. But if he could do more of that and have more genre guests on all year round, I think it can be a very fun show. I think the things that make it less fun are the things where they are so mired into the format of the Talking Dead.
Chris Hardwick's statement on the announcement is, Talking will have the skin of Talking Dead, the soul of the Nerdist podcast, and the guts of a Comic-Con panel. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
The guts of a Comic-Con panel. That's a lot of guts because a lot of people go to Comic-Con.
There is nothing really on TV that's like a talk show, interview show for genre type guests that you would see at a Comic-Con. And The Talking Dead certainly is that for Walking Dead. But I think that that would be a potentially fun show to take things that work in podcasting and do them on TV. I mean, is it going to be for a mainstream audience? If there's no Walking Dead lead-in on Sunday nights, that remains to be seen. I think that The Talking Dead is cable's like second or third highest rated show.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
It's impressive.
I mean, The Walking Dead is a great lead-in.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a really good point. What do you think of the name, Talking with Chris Hardwick? Do we need to rehab that at all?
I think it's fine because it's, you know, it's
hard talk with Hardwick.
No, because I think that you want to confuse a lot of people into thinking it's still The Talking Dead.
Yeah. So you just want to keep the talking with. Yeah. And that makes it easy to eventually get rid of Chris Hardwick and get whatever Joe Schmo you need to get.
You can't get rid of Chris
Hardwick.
Hardwick
starts acting like a diva and they need to call in somebody who is willing to take a stand. I wonder who knows the Talking franchise inside and out and also has podcast experience.
Stop.
Come on. All right.
Look, if you were trying to get rid of Chris Hardwick, you wouldn't change the name from Talking Dead to Talking with Chris Hardwick. You would, right. You know, Talking Dead, you could bring anybody off the street and it would probably do a good number.
Yeah, but you could talk with anybody else as well. I'm not advocating to lose Chris Hardwick. I love Chris Hardwick. I loved Singled Out. I was a big Singled Out guy.
Me too.
How could you not be?
Right.
So I'm very happy to see Chris Hardwick with all of this success. Great stuff. Very excited for that.
Yes.
Good stuff for Chris Hardwick.
So as long as he, you know, continues to have interesting guests and we don't do like 10 weeks of talking Badlands with like, if that's not the theme of the show, like, I mean, how much autonomy will he have to book the guests when you know there's different, you know, when we're talking, you know, Halt and Catch Fire.
People love Halt and Catch Fire.
People do now. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I don't know about Into the Badlands.
Yeah, whatever new AMC series is on, you know, how compelled is he to have like the guests of that show on every Sunday night?
Right.
We'll see. And yeah, and AMC still continues to put Better Call Saul on Mondays.
Yeah, so he's not even, I don't know, maybe there's going to be like a weekly Better Call Saul preview. I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work, but
yeah.
We'll find out. I'm sure you're going to be tuning in every week.
I'm sure we will. So we will see how that all goes. So, okay, breaking news.
It's going to be Talking with Chris Hardwick with Rob Sesternino. That's going to be the name of that podcast.
The recap podcast of only podcast on TV. Okay. All right. Good stuff. All right.
See you, Rob.
Take care, Josh. Oh, wait. Hold on. I got to send you
all
off.
Right,
okay. Okay. Here's your official send off for
no,
the show.
No. Are you serious? Really? No. Murder me.
Yeah.
Give me Easy Street any day. Has been erased. Bring back Easy Street.
All right, take care, everybody. Bye. Everything that's right is wrong again. You're always on the road for coming.